You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back. Does anybody else want to stay? Let's ride!
Delightful piece they're going to play this evening.
That's right, bro.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh.
Ladies
oh.
And gentlemen.
Oh.
Ladies
yes.
And gentlemen.
Matt just got
ladies
here.
And gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen.
It's gonna be a good night.
It's
gonna
your
be a good
please.
Night.
Attention, please. Attention, please.
And now the moment we've been waiting for is here.
The moment you've been waiting for is here. The moment I've been waiting for is here. It's 7:01 p.m. Here you go.
I have something to tell you.
Que sera, sera. You know, I was taught this song as a kid in the backyard. Now, in my grandmother's backyard, my father, he put together this play set that we had. It's like, you know how the swing set they have, where you have the swing set, you have that two-sided swing where it's almost like you're shifting back and forth, and one kid sits on each side of it. It almost looks like a horse or something like that. Let me go in the chat and see how everybody is. Everybody's fine. That's good.
I believe in the future. I don't believe in that.
Well, we had this really, really shitty swing set. It was a blue swing set, and at the end of it, there was a slide. And we used to go. Now, the way that you stabilize these swing sets is that you drive the metal legs into the earth, probably about 2 feet down or something like that. But we would start, once we started getting a little bit heavier, we would get a little bit older, we started swinging higher and higher. And as we would swing, these things would come out of the ground and they'd almost completely fly backwards and tip over. And I remember, it was like younger. We were a little bit younger. Anthony and I were on the swing set. My father was on one of the swings as well. So me and Anthony were probably on the dual swing, and he was on the single one. And he sang Que Sera, Sera back then. Whatever will be, will be. Que Sera, Sera, whatever will be, will be. That one, it's a different version than this remix, but I had that. Got a lot of good memories. That's all like late August type of memories too. It was summertime. Good stuff. Really good stuff. Hey, you know, it was a really good week. A really good week. We had an awesome guest, Dr. Callie Estes, on Tuesday night. Tuesday night she was on to talk about the criminal justice system and how law enforcement deals with people who are addicted to drugs, and of course, the overall toll of the war on drugs in general. And then Wednesday night, we had Sean Plunkett, our friend, in. And Sean and I and Matt were talking about, you know, the EU, the U.S., globalism. And we took calls from Gadget Doc, and it was a great time. Then Thursday night, last night, in studio, we had Professor Lawson Bowling, my professor from Manhattanville College, my alma mater. And, you know, since the conclusion of last night's show, I had a few people tell me, hey, you know, that's really awesome that you're able to maintain a friendship like that with your professor. And I had the same response for both of them. And I said that, you know, when you meet quality people in life, you hold on to them. You find a way to hold on to them. And I always knew that he was a quality person. I knew by the way he carried himself, very fair, very unbiased, and just a wealth of knowledge, as you know. And, you know, I looked up to him as a student does to a good teacher. And now I just, you know, I consider him a good friend and still a great teacher. I mean, the hour that we spent off the air before Zidal's in New York broadcast last night. So we got off from, quite frankly, around 8:04 or something like that. And Professor Bowling and I were just chilling out in the common space over there for an hour until 9 o'clock. That's when he took off, and I jumped on the air with these guys. And it was just awesome. We talked about all phases of American history and just asking questions and whatever. We're just talking about things. It's just not, it's not like you're sitting there. I don't want to paint this like it was, you know, me sitting there and asking questions and all that other stuff, and it's just like class. But it's the type of conversations that are had between people. That is what's really interesting, is sometimes you can't explain it to somebody. Sometimes you just have a really good conversation and it leads you all over the place. Like, we were talking about history, but in the way that, you know, we're talking about things going on in our lives. It somehow went to the first telegram sent to the United States, to what Los Angeles was like during the Civil War, to... We started talking sports a little bit more, and then you just go on to really fun but amazing anecdotes. One story he told me that I still have to go in and read up on, he said he's going to send me the link to the story, that there was a man, Matt, you're going to love this one. There was a man, a Japanese man, who was on a trip, or at least a day trip, business, I don't know what the hell it was, but he was in Hiroshima on the day of the bombing, survived it, like many people did. And finally decided he needed to go home. And where was home? Nagasaki. He got there just in time for the second bomb, survived that one, and lived to be 95 or something like that.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Talking
about that fella.
That's so that's what, you know, that I love learning about shit like that. And so I can't wait to have him back on. It's a fantastic episode. If you take some time out of your weekend, please, I would listen to that episode. Who knows what comes of this episode? I have some fun stuff. I also had a buddy, actually Jimmy, Chem Quiz in the chat room, our buddy Jimmy, one of the people who watch. He actually got in touch with me because the promotion I set up on Tumblr tonight said it's going to be an alt-right Friday night. And I guess he was a little bit concerned as to why I called it alt-right. Because the last 24 hours, that's all you're fucking hearing out of people. Especially, we got to talk about Hillary Clinton and Alex Jones. Got to mention it. Because when I got home, and I went on Facebook just for one last, you know, go around on Facebook, just post some things on the pages and get off, the first thing I saw was this Facebook Live video of Alex Jones going on for about 10 minutes addressing Hillary Clinton. Message to Hillary Clinton. But the way it was written, it kind of... It put up a red flag in my head, because it didn't seem like something he was just like an open letter. It seemed like he was responding to something. But it would have never, ever in my mind would I have ever considered that she really did say something about him in public that he was responding to. Because those are two different... I said last night, it's almost as if two different worlds just touched for the first time. That we always, you know, one world commentates on the other. The other world tries to pretend that the other one doesn't exist. You know, the alternative media. And lo and behold, there she was talking about how, you're talking about Alex Jones and his show and the things that they talk about on his show, from 9/11 being an inside job to some of the conspiracy theories involving Sandy Hook and people saying that there was child actors there, even though Alex Jones has been claiming and has been backed up so far by things that, you know, past talks that he's pulled up, that he's simply had people on the show who claim that there's child actors and interviewing people and asking them. The Sandy Hook stuff has always been very weird to me, because there is a lot of weird You see, if the media and if the establishment politician types really want to discredit all these conspiracy theories, then my God, they've got to look into the mirror. Because the way that some of these things are reported on and covered up, and the inconsistencies. I'm not talking about the inconsistencies that naturally occur when a story is breaking and people are trying to get things right. I'm talking about people showing up two different places, same exact weird behavior caught on tape. You know, that one father that was like, that was trying to get himself in character to start crying, that was like laughing as he was going up to the cameras and the microphones. Dude, shit like that is weird. 9/11, shit is weird. I never believed for a second that George Bush, with all of his foibles and downfalls and all that other shit, would actually be smart enough to perpetrate anything like that. In fact, if we've learned anything from movies like Independence Day, what's the reason why presidents are kept in the dark by a great many things, such as Area 51 or anything like that? What did the Secretary of Defense say? Plausible deniability, Mr. President. Plausible deniability. So you always have to think, you always have to remember that when we start talking conspiracy and when we start talking about putting two and two together and not relying on the most unfree media in human history, well, not the most unfree, but pretty damn unfree. You know, we're not a full-fledged communist gulag yet. But when you consider all those things, and you consider that the way that a real conspiracy needs to be conducted in order to have any kind of backup plan and you know, foolproof nature is compartmentalization. People need to know that they're doing something on a need-to-know basis. They're compartmentalized. They don't know what their partner's doing. They just know what they're doing. The problem is, when you put together a puzzle, all the pieces on their own can look pretty damn innocent. You're just set to do a certain task, respond to these orders, and you don't go outside of your jurisdiction. You do this, I do that, he does this, she does that, blah, blah, blah. That's it. And everybody knows when they're supposed to act, under what circumstances, and when they get a stand-down order, they don't do anything. When they do that, they do something. And you know what? When all those people, all those moving parts that people say that a conspiracy of the magnitude of 9/11 would not be able to be pulled off because of the massive amount of people it would needed to perpetrate, well, a lot of that can be explained away by compartmentalization, especially when each department or each compartment is comprised of people who are, in most regards, very well-meaning and are doing work that, when it is under the microscope by itself and not part of a greater whole, you know, just one gear, one cog in the clock, you know, one gear in the clock, one of the many circuit boards that make up a computer. It looks pretty innocent. It looks pretty benign. It looks pretty mundane, even. You know? So all of this stuff is being brought into the light, and two worlds are colliding that we have never seen be put together again. Like I said before, one reports on the other. Okay? The Alex Jones alternative media, new media world, which I consider us a part of. We comment, we lay down commentary and put together pieces and analyze news and history in ways that people who don't have anything to really gain from it would. You know, when I know that we started the Patreon to really get, just to sustain this operation, this show, which is just one little show in the greater network. It's the broadcast network I really want to get to. I still have dreams of having people of the audience filming segments from, you know, to send in. Like, I would love Evan from Price of Liberty, Ben from Based Heisenberg, Red Blooded America, Moonlit Matt, Rumble and Roar, anybody who has the gumption and the drive to contribute to this. I know that Sean Plunkett wants to be a part of it. You heard him. He said, dude, whatever it is, whatever I could do, tell me. I will do whatever it takes to work here. And that inspires me. Because I know Sean is this passionate about speaking, learning, community, mass communication. You know, radio is just something. You could be passionate about the news. You could be passionate about current events and a history enthusiast. But there's a whole other, it's a whole other world in itself to consider the art of spoken word. And to be behind a microphone, whether you it's you guys at home, behind the microphones and the webcams, it's the same kind of technology, you know? It's just that your microphone and webcam are usually in one. Johnny Vroom has a separate boom mic and headset and everything. That's it. Spoken word is definitely something that separates the pack from those who like to, you know, share some things on their social media. They like being in the loop. They like reading books. They like reading history. They like being well-rounded when they're in a conversation in private, but otherwise don't really want to put themselves out there. It's totally fine. It's totally fine. I'm just saying it's what separates this operation. And I want to keep content like this on the air and going for as long as possible, which is why I not only set up the Patreon finally and allowed everybody to contribute to something that really is rooted in something very, very genuine. Whether or not people agree, can't say it's not genuine. And not only that, but that's why I really encourage you guys at home, get in touch with us. You know, you can reach me, frank@zenlive.tv, frank@zenlive.tv. Send me an email. Give me an idea for a show. Give me an idea for a segment that you can pull off. Why don't you do some man on the street stuff? And I'm saying this not only for my benefit, but for you. If you have the balls and you have the gumption, you have the clarity, and you have the personality to pull off something like a man on the street, A, start your own YouTube and start putting shit like that out there, especially if you're asking thought-provoking questions that raise, like, you know, really, really human dilemmas. Like, you go around the street and say, hey, would you rather do this or do that? And what's your, or, you know, just go down the street and ask people who the vice president is. See how many people know. Things like that. That, first of all, people love that kind of content on the internet, and you might be able to do well for yourself. And number two, I would love to feature that stuff on the air. Not only on this show, but in between transitions of different shows that run on this network. You know, I want to hear all those ideas. And I know when people start finding stuff that's doing well, and then they start seeing what it's in, what the greater picture is, like the network and all the personalities here, that's something that attracts people. You know, what's the old, hold on a second, I got a great, this is a John Wesley quote. Where the hell is it? Oh wait, not John Wesley, sorry. And this is actually a quote that I got from one of Professor Bowling's classes. That's the one cool thing that I really loved about Professor Bowling as well, Matt, is that whenever a semester would end, at the end, after you hand in your final exam and you walk out of the room and that's it, you're on vacation, you hand in your final, and then he gives you a sheet called Parting Shots. And Parting Shots is just a sheet that was back in front full of quotes from famous figures in history. Inspiring quotes, sometimes a Bible verse or here and there, because he's a pretty religious man. I believe he's Catholic, and he's very, very well studied with the Bible as well. But did you ever get any... See, that's the thing. Those are the people. That's why I say people of character, high-quality people that you meet in your life, don't let go of them. I'll get around to the quote again. What I mean by quality is... Think about that quality right there, where through his knowledge of the Bible and other talks I've had with him, I know that he's a man of faith. I've seen him at friends' weddings and funerals of family members before. You know, he's a very supportive person. And, you know, he probably doesn't want me talking about stuff like this, but I'm just going to tell you about character. It's always good to celebrate a good person. But when you see that stuff, you see when a person shows up to show, when they make themselves available to you, what they know, what they subscribe to in life, what they aspire to in life, and what they don't push down your throat. It doesn't matter if you're an atheist, if it doesn't matter if you're Muslim or Jewish or agnostic or, you know, Buddhist, Taoist, whatever the hell it is, Zoroastrian, doesn't matter. You go and talk to somebody like Professor Bowling, and none of that means anything. And he's a man of faith himself. So stuff like that is very disarming. And I know I want people like that in my life. And then beyond that, there's always just great quotes. Great quotes that are always there. So little parting shots. Who was it? I think it is John Wesley, yeah. Set yourself on fire with enthusiasm, and people will come for miles to watch you burn. That's what it is. Not, you know, you don't have to take your clothes off and shake your ass in front of a camera, because anybody can see that shit. Anybody can see. You can go and you can scour the internet. You get all the porn you want. You get all the girls you want posing in bikinis, posing in nothing, posing in just, you know, they make themselves, they go dance in the ocean, then they roll around in the sand, and the sand is their bikini, just barely covering up their areolas. And you do this, you do that, you can see all types of people at all levels of exposure, all levels of acts of, you know, sexual acts. You can do whatever you want, whatever your fetish is, your kink, your pleasure, it's all there for you. Okay, but you know, I do believe that a lot of people, judging by what's hot and what's not in society in general, they do put themselves out there just because there's, you know, attention to be grabbed, a lot of attention. Okay, people with a lot of, you know, issues with their parents, authority figures of the past, people who have things to work out. Obviously, there are people who just like to have fun and whatever. But let's all just be honest: a lot of people, it's just a very shallow attention grab. It is. And you can do it. And I will enjoy all the shallowness of it whenever it crosses my path. Whenever I reblog a scantily clad woman just looking curvy and voluptuous and beautiful and just, you know, twisted in their nice cute poses, showing off their hips and their curves. And I just want to dive into her. Okay? So, it's not like it's not great, but let's just, you know, let's be honest about why a lot of people do it. Attention. But what if you had more people who really found a passion? Because you can't say you have a passion for taking pictures of your ass in bathrooms. Okay? You can't say. It's very, very, that's a hard sell. Well, I just really have a passion. There's something about bathroom mirrors in my ass that just, I don't know. There's a call. I feel a calling. So, you can't say you're passionate about it. But at the same time, because that is what is such a big driver in pop culture, society, the youth, the way that, you know, we've become ultra, ultra progressive. And, you know, anything but settling down seems like a cool thing to do these days, to be honest. Which is just what it is. I know what time it is. I see what's going on in the media. I know what the opinion you're supposed to have is, according to the media. You know? It's still the same message. Whether you take it as the opinion you should have, or somebody on the outside saying, okay, well, judging by the way this network and all these networks interact with their viewers and the programming they provide, the commentary they lay down, this is what they think it's cool, or you should be totally okay with how to be living. That's just it. That's easy shit. But I wonder where the passion is. I'd love to see all the distractions that pull people into maybe getting caught into habits of just being very shallow. I'd love to see all those distractions, those hurdles get out of the way of young guys and girls that are making their way up. I'd like to see some more passion come out. And I know it's out there. I know we have a lot of talented musicians and athletes. We just watched 2 weeks of the Olympics. I mean, you can't tell me that every last Olympian that showed up for USA or any country in the world doesn't have a passion for the sport and competition. Totally. And that's what's so great about it. I can't stand the commercialization of the Olympics, but goddamn, do I enjoy watching people put their life's work to the test, competing and fucking just, I love it. I love that shit. It's great. So maybe that's what I'm saying. Maybe it all just comes down to a little bit of frustration with seeing where all the enthusiasm is. There's too much enthusiasm of taking pictures of your ass over your shoulder. You know? Too much enthusiasm about being the person with the best, with the most amount of Facebook likes. But knowing inside that you're an empty shell. You don't have anything there to back it up. You just know that you'd be able to scream it a little bit better than somebody else, but you just heard it from somewhere else. There was no real learning that was that happened there. I want people to learn again. What do you think, Matt?
I guess people should learn again.
What have you been learning these days? What's the last thing you learned?
I don't remember.
What was the last thing
Whatever
you watched? What was the last documentary you watched?
What was the what?
What was the last documentary you watched?
Probably one I watched with you at your house sometime. Whatever we watched last. Oh, then we watch World War II something or...
Oh, that's right. We were watching...
Hitler something.
Yeah, World War II in color. I got 3 episodes left of that. I just finished the Operation Overlord episode. That's a good one. World War II in color. But I want to get around to a few others right off the bat. Just want to jump right in. I saw this one... it was a World War II, but it was from an African, might have been South African. I don't know, the different types of African involvement. Obviously, there was fighting. We were talking about Ethiopia last night, but a lot of different sources of relief and reinforcement. I want to read all about that. But, you know, here's some other good stuff. You want to talk about another good week of guests coming up. Look at what's been sent to us. Got one guest that we're working on right now that wants to come on to talk about how children can be put on the sex offenders list just by receiving text messages now. And I was wondering if it had, if this was what, as I was reading this, I was wondering if this had anything to do with that kid down in the Carolinas or something like that, who was dating a girl who was all, they were both underaged, but there was like child pornography charges that were like being brought up on another minor for sending sexts. I think it might have been child pornography charges being brought up against a underage individual who sent a picture of themselves to a girlfriend or a boyfriend. And this is a precedent that has been set, and you know, I guess it's still ongoing in some places, and they want to talk about that. Recent sexting incident. Recently, Lisa Stroman, this is who might be coming on the show soon next week. Dr. Stroman worked with the school where 30% of the kids in the school of 800 were suspended. 30%. 12 and 13-year-olds when a sext was spread to multiple students. Then the safety resource officer interviewed each child, issued them a juvenile Miranda rights, which allows other children the option not to call their parents, which they all chose, of course, not to do. The children the children self-incriminate, which then allow them to submit legal complaints. These children are now facing serious legal ramifications, many of whom were already sent to jail. Imagine that. But aside from that, here's another interesting guest that I'm working on getting on. Hey, Frank. I want to offer an interview with Hollywood's most famous rabbi, Mark Borowitz. Okay, he's an ex-mobster.
I've heard of this guy.
Mark Borowitz, ex-mobster who's now dedicating his life to helping others heal and turn society's fear of convicted criminals around.
He might have been on Savage before.
Mark, Rabbi Mark is available to discuss his life story, the journey from mobster to rabbi, and how he's been able to achieve such incredible success. What makes his program special? Rabbi Mark will never turn down a person in need through nonprofit and all that. I got to see it. Definitely got to talk to him about this. So she said that that's definitely in the books. He's good for Skype, too, so we're going to be able to hang with him on Skype. He'll be on the show next week. Going to work out the day. It might be Tuesday. So watch out for that. Gadget Doc says he's big. Book him. Oh, he's big? Okay.
Dude,
see, this is...
Dude, he was on Savage before that, dude.
Out of nowhere. I actually went back and forth with this PR woman that's been getting in touch with me. She got in touch with me for the interview that we had with Dr. Callie Estes about the war on drugs on Tuesday night, which if you haven't seen it, once again, go listen to it. Find it on the podcast. Listen to it. It was a great, great show, especially since we talked about the war on drugs so much and its real impact on people. And I asked her, her name is Dana. I said, Dana, listen, I'm just curious how you found me, because you've been like a gift from God this past week. The most amazing guest she's throwing my way, and I didn't know where she came from, because, you know, I registered this show with like radioguest.com, like radioguestbooking.com and stuff, and to be honest, you don't get a lot of quality guests coming out of there. It's always somebody you never heard of trying to push a book that is really not interesting sounding, and it's just it. And I still have not booked one person from that. And I registered with that. I think I registered with that website the night we went to go see. It was the premiere of Episode 7, Star Wars. It was like December 27th. I remember that night before we left. You remember that night before we left? You came by. I was registering. I was sharing the RSS of the show to like dozens of podcast websites. I registered for RadioGuest.com. I ate 1.5 stuffed peppers that Lauren made. 1.5 stuffed peppers. I saved the other half from when we got home. And we went off. It was a rainy night. Started off as a rainy night that night. I remember. And we were going to Alamo to watch Episode 7. But in either case... Either case, I don't know where she came from. And she said, to be honest, I don't know either. Your name popped up. We were subscribed to a lot of different places to help promote our clients, so, and they love what we did with Callie Estes, so let's keep this up. Mark Borowitz.
We're just like other people.
He's definitely on Michael Savage.
We love to sing, we love to dance.
I gotta ask you ask him when he gets on the show.
Was he from New York?
Very.
Let me see. Officially ordained 2000, University of Judaism, with a master's in rabbinic? I don't know. Rabbinic literature. Rabbi Mark Borowitz combined his knowledge of the Torah and street smarts to shape his calling, helping recovering addicts find their way in the world. Spiritual leader, author, head rabbi, CEO, and overall anomaly. He's been able to reach both addict and the congregant. And destigmatize this life-threatening disease. I want to learn all about his mob days. Definitely. So that'll come up next week. I'll keep you guys in the loop on that. But that's what I'm talking about. So going back to what we were saying with Professor Bowling, because that's really what this all came from. Quality people in life, you don't give those up. If you find a quality person, you keep them in your life. And that's why I've been able to maintain relationships with people like Professor Bolt. There's many people like that in my life. You know, never expect to be such good friends with your college history professor 10 years after you graduate. But you can. You can, and you should. You should. Stay in touch with people. Doesn't matter if you're separated by miles. You have Facebook. Be one of the people who uses it for the right reasons. All right. Let's see. Okay, let's finally get around to this here. I said tonight is the alt-right Friday night. Not because I consider myself alt-right, but because in the last 24 hours, I have heard alt-right used thousands of times. I'm exaggerating, but thousands of times. Literally exaggerating. I'm literally exaggerating. And, you know, there's a couple of things I want to get around to here, because look at this. Forget about Huma Abedin and this pay-for-play nonsense with the, well, it's not nonsense, it's reality, with the State Department. That is so mind-boggling. It's mind-blowing. Forget about all of the crime. The crime, and in many, you can interpret a lot of this stuff as treason as well. Imagine the crime, the level of crime that's being uncovered almost daily now. Almost daily. And it's not going to stop anytime soon. It's only going to get worse, and I can't wait because this is so fucking entertaining. But almost daily. And what are we talking about here? Hillary Clinton goes up and talks about Alex Jones. Something that we talked about before as being, you know, very, very odd thing for Donald Trump to do, because when he was on Alex Jones' show last year, you know, in mid to late 2005, 2015, we noticed that shit. We're like, you know, that's pretty fucking ballsy. Pretty fucking ballsy. Because you go, but then again, you know, like we said, Ron Paul spent a lot of time on Alex Jones' show. Nobody brought that up, but then again, he didn't get the nomination yet. See, it's all stuff that people really don't care about, but they bring it up. They say, okay, well, we can make this person seem like a loon because they did this. So it's so weird. It was just so weird, like we said, to see two worlds that never touch go on and cross over. And let's listen to it for a second. Hold on a second. Where is it? All right, listen to this. Oh, wait, no, that's Paul Joseph Watson. Paul Joseph Watson made a video that actually is fantastic. Check this out. Watch this.
They said in October I'd be dead in 6 months.
Listen to this voice. First of all, you see, this is why a four-minute clip spends a whole hour on the show. Listen to that voice. Does this sound like a voice of a person who has, you know, has had many tender moments in her life? Seriously, can you hear a voice like this, you know, wooing and calming and lulling somebody to sleep, singing a lullaby? Can you really imagine anything beautiful coming out of this voice? No, this is a voice that has been put through so much strain, so much yelling and condescending and reprimanding and screaming and just, you can just tell. You can tell what this voice has been used for.
It's also what happens when you listen to the radio host, Alex Jones, who claims that 9/11 and the Oklahoma City bombings were inside jobs. He even said, and this really just is so disgusting.
Okay, and here we go. See? Look at that. Let's go. Let's go right there. And this is where she puts on her fucking Juilliard performance over here. That's Juilliard over here. It's ridiculous. And this is just real disgusting. But then you look at her face at the end, and she has the same face as that real bitchy teacher that you had in elementary school. who also had the same kind of face. Like, she is just a tyrant of a woman. And then we're going to see some more tyrannical things she said, but just watch this pause again.
He even said, and this really just is so disgusting.
This is a woman that let people die. That let people die because it was probably the safer thing to do than be found out that she was running guns to Syria through Libya. This is real disgusting. It's probably on the same level, but...
He even said the victims of the Sandy Hook massacre were child actors, and no one was actually killed there. I don't know what happens in somebody's mind or how dark their heart must be.
Dark? Their heart?
To say things like that. But Trump doesn't challenge these lies. He actually went on Jones's show and said, "Your reputation is amazing. I will not let you down."
Wow. Wow. So that there's the alt. So we've been hearing about alt-right all day today. And the best thing about it is this. The best thing about it is this. That the KKK stuff is starting again. So it's that's getting real fun. A woman who called who called Robert Byrd her mentor, eulogized him with the rest of it. You're talking about, you ever see the Bill and Hillary, they used the Confederate flag as one of their campaign pins or something like that when they were down in Argo. You're talking about, this is unbelievable. It's so funny. And the reason why we can laugh about it is because it's not really working. It's not working. There are people out there who are lost to reason. They were never going to be pulled over. And they've not just been made opponents of Republicanism. The Republican Party, not Republicanism. I'm sorry. But they've just not been made into bigger opponents of the Republican Party. They've been made into seething, drooling animals that really would like to see some people be killed. So it's not like there's anything there that she's doing new because everybody else is laughing at her now. The racism stuff really is not working that much. And I got this one article started saying the same thing. When I read it, I felt so good about it. And here is something else that I thought, and that was from Milo Yiannopoulos. I got to get around to that. But here's another one. Here's what I really liked about Milo's comments. Oh, this is when she talks about Milo and his headlines, too. Listen to this.
He hired Stephen Bannon, the head of a right-wing website called Breitbart.com, as the campaign CEO.
See, now, here's the thing about this. This is where all the alt stuff comes in. I saw this one thing. Let me derail one more time because concerns about mental health, opposition website has no right to exist. Here you go. Let's talk about Breitbart for a second. This is from the Daily Caller I came across. And for everybody out there who wants to have something else to be scared of, aside from her picks for the Supreme Court, which would then effectively eliminate the legislative branch. It would effectively eliminate the legislative branch altogether. Hillary campaign vows to destroy opposition website. Your First Amendment is going to be under attack. Operations like, your favorite independent websites, alternative news sites, they're going to be under attack. With this Harridan, they're going to be under attack. Listen to this. Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton's campaign has sent out a fundraising email arguing that the website Breitbart News has, quote, no right to exist. Now, I know a lot of our anarcho-capitalist friends, they bring up, I always hear the right to exist argument come up with subjects like Israel. And whether it be somebody very peacefully arguing about the history of formation of and the existence of the country of Israel and whether or not it should be there or not. That has nothing to do with the fact that the other people who use it are people like Iran and others that are willing to start nuking and destroying the rest of the world. There's that. That the right to exist also has really negative connotations. Because you're talking about life. You know, you're talking about the extinguishing of life there. There's two ways that it sounds. When you're in a room with your friends and you're talking about right to exist, history, national borders, World War I, World War II, deals that were made, people that got disenfranchised and kicked out, having their land shrunk, and it all fine and dandy. But when you talk about right to exist, existing, we're talking about vocabulary. You talk about what it really evokes in a person. This is some really heavy shit. Really heavy shit. And for somebody to be planting the seeds that we can just arbitrarily say that a person, an organization, people with certain opinions that publish their thoughts to voluntary subscribers are, you know, their right to exist is really just an arbitrary matter that is handled by somebody who is not them, that has managed to accrue unbelievable amounts of power, influence, especially through owning the media. That is the only way that to call her a crook is a compliment. Because it's so far beyond that. It's so far beyond that. If the media that is to completely control, and here, let's get around to that. Listen to this. We've had a conservative media in this country for a while, says the email. Think about that. We've had a conservative media in this country for a while, says the email, sent Thursday and signed by Deputy Communications Director Christina Reynolds. I don't always like what they have to say, but I respect their role and their right to exist. Reynolds' acknowledgement said that the regular conservative media has a right to exist, though it is used to contrast it with Breitbart, which apparently has no right to exist. This is why I laugh when I hear alt-right. Because to me, what I know that there are people out there that actually are drawing lines of what it is and all that stuff. That's fine. But to me, and what I'm seeing coming out of my interpretation of this is that the alt-right is the actual group of people who have media that is not controlled by them. That's all that they're talking about here. They don't care about the memes and the Harambe and the Pepes and all that stuff. They don't care about that. Although I was waiting for a Harambe joke. Now that she's talking about Alex Jones and conspiracy theory out there and doing every desperate... Oh my God, is this woman desperate to smear Donald Trump. She's desperate to smear him. Nobody would ever consider giving Alex Jones and InfoWars the press she just did in the past. But she is so desperate. They all are. So in this context, alt-right to me exposes the fact that there really is no opposition party. There hasn't been an opposition party. It's been a controlled opposition. Just like what people call Alex Jones, controlled opposition. But despite all that stuff, this is an admission to me, indirectly, that the Fox News, that was the news that they could handle. They could handle that stuff. They could put up with Drudge to a certain extent, but not entirely. That's still right up there. They're the grandfathers of it all. But that's what alt-right is to me when I hear Clinton talking about this shit. It's the admission that there is no opposition party, there's no opposition media, and that progressivism is a pretty much, it's taken hold of everybody. And that this is, we're talking about an autocratic government here. It's completely autocratic. So at the same time where they talk about the filth of the alt-right, I like what Milo Yiannopoulos had to say. Listen to the rest of what she said.
Now, to give you a flavor of his work, here are a few headlines.
I'll talk about, hold on.
A flavor of Bart.com as the campaign CEO. Now, to give you a flavor of his work, here are a few headlines.
Now, he's going to say a couple of headlines that were written by Milo Yiannopoulos. Everybody knows Milo's deal. And if you don't, check him out. I think he's a gay Jewish Brit who is a very big conservative, anti-PC culture guy who really embraces the whole term alt-right and is really campaigning hard for Trump. But and he's actually kind of given gay people a little bit of an escape route. It really has. Just in his comfort level. And he knocks it out of the park. But she goes and she takes two of his headlines and uses it to show what kind of stuff Breitbart puts out there and to smear Stephen K. Bannon. She'd never say that. Well, let's just go.
They've published. And I'm not making this up. Birth control makes women unattractive and crazy. Would you rather your child had feminism or cancer?
Oh! What? Like the money changers in the temple. Everybody... When everybody felt so appalled in the old days, they'd rip their cloaks open and throw themselves down. The Sanhedrin over here.
Gabby Giffords, the gun control movement's human shield.
And of course, you know, you never say that Milo is a gay man who's probably highlighting some real nasty stuff that's going on in the world of social justice fanaticism and political correctness. Doesn't say any of that. But listen to this. Hillary Clinton today used every tactic in the playbook of the identity-obsessed progressive left. Smears, name-calling, and finger-wagging. This is precisely what the alt-right is responding to. This is Milo speaking. They post offensive memes because they know it'll wind up boring, grouchy grannies like Hillary. The speech codes and political correctness of the left are what has given the rise to the vibrant new movement. What has given rise to Donald Trump's extraordinary popularity, and what gives rise to me and my fabulous headlines. They were, by the way, birth control makes women unattractive and crazy. Sorry, no offense, but it's true. And would you rather your child had feminism or cancer? No prizes for guessing which readers chose. Little did I realize when I coined the feminism is a cancer hashtag that it would end up in the mouth of a Democratic nominee for president. But there's something else that Clinton represents. While she obsesses over the ironic memes of dissident youths on the internet, there are Black Lives Matter activists calling for the deaths of white police officers, and there are teaching assistants in American universities hosting courses on how to stop white males. If there's genuine, noxious, and damaging racism in the United States, it isn't coming from the alt-right, who are responding to it. Much of the alt-right's rhetoric is designed to illuminate the absurdity of the identitarian politics and the blatant hypocrisy and cruelty of the progressive left. It's working, and that's why the left is so scared. Hillary is using the same old failed leftist tactics of name-calling, vague allegations, and guilt by association, but hoping for a different result this time. In other words, she's complaining about the phenomenon she helped create, thinking she can beat it with the bad habits and lazy smears that fostered it in the first place. Good luck with that. And from that point of view, I go so crazy for what's going on. I'm so happy. I'm happy we get to have these conversations. I'm happy that people are getting more and more in your fucking face. Can't cower. We can't cower, especially here. We can't become what's going on in Europe. Obviously, everything, I say that because everything that happens here has already happened in Europe. couple of years ago. So we got to stop. Everybody's got to reverse the trend. And I just like it. I like it. Provocative people like Milo, you need it. You need it. You need it. You needed the Howard Sterns of the world. You needed it. Even if you hated them, you needed it. Why do you think people like Milo get so many people hating on him, but they follow his every move? Same thing with Stern. It's just, who the fuck wants it? Because what you have here is you have people that get caught up in the bog that is popular thought. And when you're sitting around preaching to the choir to each other, and you realize, oh, you're just commiserating, and life is so bad, and life is this, and we're so everything's so stuffy, and you can't get anything out anymore, you can't do anything. You're down with the cause, but at the same time, you're suffering, you're stifling from all of the emotional hysteria that comes along with it. You know, can you imagine hanging out with a group of, you know, hipster, progressive, leftist liberals? I'm sorry, I've seen some really cringy broadcasts on our very own network over the last couple of months. It's just cringy. I don't understand how people can sit in the same room and commiserate over things, over problems, when the solutions to the problems are things that they're advocating that are just getting more and more intense, and the problem continues to increase. So you have people that are in this real abusive relationship, this circular logic, that are preaching to the choir about how great statism is and how great, you know, socialism is and how evil the rich are and how disaffected and disenfranchised this one is and this one's victimhood and that one's victimhood. And oh, look at us. We're all the colors of the shitty rainbow, everybody. It's like the shittiest rainbow. Like, I don't understand why they try to paint them as, like, you know, all the colors of the rainbow, this great, beautiful union. When it's just like all these different shades of shit brown and diarrhea green, and it's just these terrible, yucky colors. And I'm not talking about skin color, by the way, before somebody makes that into a soundbite one day. Not talking about skin color. I'm talking about the colors of all the problems. It's like, why are you going to give them Vibrant? Why are you going to give them Roy G. Biv? You don't deserve Roy G. Biv. You're not hopeful. You guys are commiserating, whining bastards. And the best thing is that you've been having your way. If you look at history from the last days of the 19th century onward, it's been a progressive assault. Nibbling with great civil rights victories and great victories overall. Industrious victories. We've had, you know, I'm not saying that it's been all downhill, but look at what's been happening. Chip away until we're here. The New Deal, Great Society, the war on this, the war on that. And what do you know? Society's becoming less prosperous. People are becoming less free. People feel a little bit more oppressed. They don't trust the people enforcing their laws. They don't trust this and that. There's violence in more so. There's more poverty, even though that there's been a war declared on that as well. And what do? You would never, ever admit defeat. You would never do that. So you commiserate. You make up phony people and phony boogeymen that you have to go after. And you say you need more money. You need more of this. You need more of that. Meanwhile, you have somebody like Milo Yiannopoulos. You have anybody that's out there willing to crack a joke, even if it's just through the safety of the internet, where you can drop a meme out there and it can just go viral and be completely anonymous that you did it, but you were the one that lit that fuse. That's cool. That's cool about the internet. Of all the things that's wrong with it, that's cool. And that's why free speech on the internet is the next step. That's the next thing to go. Because if you're able to bog down what is being printed, what is being shared, What is considered hate speech? What's offensive? If you're be able to bog that down so that really all people ever have an opportunity of being exposed to is what we have on television, whoa. Whoa. Because let's remember something else we touched on when we just a couple of minutes ago. This is the same media, the same print and broadcast media that has actually kept Hillary Clinton out of jail. Out of jail. You know, that's the only reason why she's not serving, I mean, way more than her lifetime's worth of years. Way more. I mean, put all that together. And that's why you need the Howard Sterns of history. That's why you need the Milo Yiannopouloses of history. As much as people consider him a polarizing figure, we love him over here, Michael Savage. I love him. That's why you need him. And all conspiracy theories aside, that's why you need some of the Alex Joneses as well. Because what the hell else is there? But here's the thing. All those people that get into those real abusive relationships, usually it's a continued cycle because of something else that happened. You get into an abusive relationship, it's usually you didn't have a good relationship with your parents or something else. You usually don't like that person in your family or that one real ornery uncle that's able to say things that are completely uncouth. But most of the reason why you can't stand it is because he's probably right. You know? That's it. People like to get their abuse. They like to have... They like feeling that the cognitive dissonance get poked. I don't know what it is, though. They don't work out or anything like that. They need to go punch a fucking heavy bag. They're all so gross looking. I haven't met one really in shape commie yet. Have you met an in shape commie? I think having a good body is probably like one of those other like privileges that you're not supposed to have.
These aren't real Soviet communists. They're fucking make-pretend communists.
Make-pretend?
They haven't been forced to swallow it at fucking gunpoint yet.
Man, oh man. Hey, we got a lot of cool people in the chat room right now. I want to give a shout-out to... what else did I do? Hold on a second. Shit. We did Hillary. You want to see Alex Jones' response? It's 8 o'clock, but we're going to do a little bit. Actually, no, fuck that. You guys take whatever we did. I don't want to do overkill. Let's go to something else. Real quick. Oh. Let's see here. Now, this song... Matt, obviously I'm going nuts for the Stranger Theme soundtrack, but I found this entire playlist on SoundCloud that is just full of all these synthwave type of really 80s sounding cyberpunk feeling tunes. Moonlit Matt knows them. He's going nuts for them. Listen to this one. Hold on. Wait, where the hell's the volume? Oh, here it is. We'll let that go. A couple things here I want to get around to. Heroin. Laced with elephant tranquilizer, Matt.
I want some of that
shit. It's hit the streets.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
What streets? What streets are these in?
Let's see here.
Now I can literally do enough drugs that'll put down a fucking bull elephant.
You think you'd be able to survive that?
Absolutely.
Carfentanil can slow breathing significantly. It's not approved for humans use, but it's used to commercially sedate large animals such as elephants. About 2 milligrams can knock out a nearly 2,000-pound African elephant.
I could handle that shit.
You can handle it?
I could fucking take that.
2 milligrams?
That's a little bit.
I don't know, dude. I don't think you can do it.
Where can I get some from?
I don't know.
Are they legal? No, I'm interested now. Tell me more about it.
I don't think it's legal.
I want to know.
Heroin's
not legal. If I look
legal.
In for it myself, I'll find it in the black market,
yeah.
bro.
Well, if heroin is not legal, I don't think that that's going to be, you know. I don't think that's
all
part
right,
of it.
Well, at least I know that I need to find a zoo worker or something that will sell me some under the carpet.
Yeah, well, in either case, Ann Caparato, what's going on there, man? Gadget Doc's here. Nikki, Moonlit Matt, Rumble and Roar, Frankie Castle, Iron Forestry, Lester, Mad Lark, Midas is with us. What's going on there, man? Good to see you again. And a bunch of other people who are in the... Oh, and ZZZ, Triple Z, 1987. And a bunch of other people who are watching but are not in the chat room. Please call in. The Skype is Zen Live TV. Zen Live TV. We'll be on for a few minutes longer. What else did I want to talk about tonight? Something personal that happened. I have a couple things here that I want to do next week, too. I have the actual rules for radicals here, Saul Alinsky's. That we should go through those rules to see how much of it is being used today. Also, the Nigel Farage at the Trump rally was hilarious. I loved it. I'm having so much fun. You know, I don't understand why people are having such a bad time. I love it. I love it. Scientific Journal. No evidence for gender identity. Uh-oh. Don't want to say that. What's going on, Max?
Sorry, I missed what you just said about Nigel Farage at the Trump rally.
Oh, yeah. No, his speech at the Trump rally the other day. I've watched that twice so far. I just had such a fun time. I want a drink with the
Can't
guy.
Can't barrage the Farage.
Dude, I just want to have a drink with him. I think he has the greatest laugh. I think he probably has a fantastic sense of humor in private when he can, like, really curse and say what he wants to say. I think that he's probably, like, the coolest dude. I don't care.
Yeah, well, he's, you know, how people talk about gun control in the UK, how strict it is, and it's actually quite easy for any law-abiding citizen to get a firearms license for shotguns for clay shooting. It's a very popular sport there, actually.
Yeah.
And he's talked about multiple times as and made it, I think, part of the UKIP platform getting handguns legal again in the UK. I think there's very little not to like about the direction that Farage took UK politics.
No, it really is great. I'm really having a good time with watching him do his thing out there. But, you know, what do you think about all this alt-right stuff? First of all, I had to go out and actually try to find definitions of it today because I didn't know what to actually really think.
You know, the second you mentioned Saul Alinsky, it made me realize it's basically, and this has been going on and finally metastasized for the last 10 years, is that the alt-right is basically conservatives, libertarians, and some unsavory, you know, white nationalists or stuff like that. Basically anybody who's not a liberal. Using the tactics, or anybody who's not a Democrat, using the tactics of Saul Alinsky. I own a copy of Rules for Radicals, actually, and it was one thing that I made or asked people in my Young Americans for Liberty chapter to read. That's my... Okay.
Well, yeah, I have to... read a little bit more. I've been listening to a lot of serials on Saul Alinsky. Like I told you guys before, I'm a big fan. If I am a fan of any of the work that Glenn Beck has done in his career, it is his company's producing of these history serials. I really, really enjoy those. I'm on the lookout for him. I don't listen to him that much. I like Pat Gray a little bit more than any of the other two, but... those history serials, fantastic. And they've been putting out so much stuff on Saul Alinsky and the history of progressivism in the U.S., starting actually with Teddy Roosevelt. So that's been really, really interesting. So if you're ever on SoundCloud or anything like that, go look up Glenn Beck's account, because all those serials are there. So if you're not a fan of him, fine. He only just does the narration. You don't have to listen to his show or anything like that. But I like the history that he's put out.
No, it's definitely more substantial. And I think I've listened to a couple episodes as well of his installments on Saul Alinsky. One of the things that bothers me most about talking to most anybody who's involved in politics is that they are, I feel like as a libertarian personally, I at least understand and have read the other side's arguments. I've read both progressive socialist arguments. I've read Milton Friedman is kind of like the standard bearer for the Republican side. But they don't even know anything about what the other things is or how it goes. And it's super, super based. And I think Glenn Beck is doing everybody a great service by getting people interested in, you should at least understand your enemy.
Yeah.
Know your enemy and know yourself. No, and that's the problem with Gary Johnson these days is he's, know nothing. He thinks Hillary Clinton's a great public servant.
Yeah.
He doesn't understand libertarianism is just anything besides the best of both parties.
Yeah. I used to think that way too when I first was hearing about it. I was like, oh, it's almost like libertarians are Blade, the vampire hunter. It's like he's kind of like has everybody's strengths but nobody's weaknesses. And then, of course, you start reading, and there's just a lot more that goes into it than that. So, I don't know. It's Gypsy, you wanted to say something?
Just wanted to say I saw Glenn Beck. He was on CNN the other night, and he was on point breaking down he was basically sounding the alarm about Trump and his second in command and comparing them to Hitler and one of his second in command, and how even if Trump loses, how this could only just be the beginning. I don't know where you guys stand on this or if you guys have covered this, but how he potentially, Trump has said that
he's going to start his own media network.
Yeah, he's going to start his own media. He had a while ago, maybe a month or two ago, he said he would take a long vacation or whatever, and maybe he will, but I think he will circle back and just keep this machine of, angered Americans that feel slighted and, Americans that feel they're not getting their fair shake for whatever it is, and how it could turn into, something else. I don't think, I'm not going to go as far as and say he's going to turn into Hitler, because I just don't think we just live in a different time. The fact that World War II already happened is not going
to dislike comparisons to Hitler, because Hitler, he was a democratically elected. You can describe every successful politician in the same their tactics in the same way that Hitler used. I'm just going to throw that out there. He was a democratically elected. Of course, he had his paramilitary wing, but
if
anybody's got a paramilitary wing in the U.S., it's the Democratic Party.
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, and not only that, but every
sorry.
Every department is armed to the teeth now, and not only that, but I haven't really heard that much out of him that the promises that were made by Hitler, especially to the Austrians and everybody else. I mean, you're talking about they had big time problems, promising everybody jobs, not so much creating. But the thing is here, when somebody promises them jobs and they're talking about meddling with trade, and they're talking about potentially, I don't know what you guys think about these N1V visas. What are they called? The tech worker visas. You know what they are, Max?
I couldn't tell you the exact.
In either case,
I couldn't tell you the exact number, but the thing I've noticed about them is that a lot of job applications, I don't know if you've applied for them, but a lot of these job applications in the tech industry, they have, will we need to sponsor your immigration status? as one of the questions, you know, what's your visa standard? And one of the things that they can get a one, HB1, I think Gadget Dog is saying. One of the things these tech companies and other companies can do is that they can import labor and the immigration status, the legality of them remaining this Indian or Japanese or Korean or whatever worker or, you know, French or whatever.
Yep.
Their legality of being in the U.S. is constituent to them keeping that job. And it leads to a lot of unfair situations for those workers. Not to mention that they prefer having those workers over a native born like myself, where I lose my job.
Listen, we had that story that came out of Orlando when Disney was pretty much having American workers training foreigners to replace them at their jobs, to bring in foreign workers. I don't think that's cool at all. I just don't.
I'm totally free market, but this is not a free market situation. Not to mention that we're getting, American taxpayers aren't paying for the education.
Well, aside from education, getting back to Donald Trump, I really don't care about what he's saying. Things that nobody's trying to say and nobody's saying as far as immigration is not being said anywhere else. And I think it's completely necessary. Obviously, he's not going to dismantle no fucking welfare state. He's a progressive, after all. It's not going to go away. Even if he was the greatest gift to every libertarian in the world, he's not going to be able to do anything in 4 or 8 years. So, in knowing that you're not going to get rid of this welfare state, you need to be able to say, if we're going to stay afloat and make anything stabilize again, you got to take care of immigration. And if you know what? He's pissing people off. Fine. People want to say it's racist. No, it's just true. You know, we have a big fucking problem. We have a big problem. There's immigration problems all over the world, but our problem is the southern border. And if we're going to keep up this spending and taxing, then it's got to stop. And, you know, so what are you going to do with the 11 to 31 million people that are here, that have been here for whatever? Say, well, you know what? We've talked about this on the show. I never thought that deportation and hunting people down is really even a valid thought, because it's impractical. It's too much money, too much resources. That's ridiculous. You don't do that. What you can just basically start doing is, number one, cut off the goddamn spigot. Every dime that is going to someone who is not a citizen does not get it anymore. Period. It's sorry, we would love to help, but we are in bad straits right now. Can't do it. It's not racist, it's not xenophobic, just can't do it. You want to stay? Fine. We can't pay for you anymore, though. That's number one. Number two, as we've all said before, you want to talk about the crime that does come over the border, which a lot of it does, and this catch and release programs and these people that have been released and then committed murders and these sanctuary cities and all that. These are real situations. It's a real thing. It's got to be addressed. The first thing you can do is you can take out 1/3, like 28 to 30% of the prison population are illegal immigrants. Just send them home. And there's all off the bat, 1/3 of your prison overpopulation thing goes out the window too. So clear that out, stop with the welfare, and you know what? Just start enforcing the laws then from there on in. And the people who stay here are gonna naturally have to either buck up and make something work, or they're going to feel inclined to go somewhere else that will pay for their every whim. I'm sorry, it sounds very, very harsh, but it's time to have big boy talks. And I understand, well, you know, I understand that who gravitates to Donald Trump in some respect, just like we all know who gravitates toward Democrats.
Well, going back to libertarians and immigration, the very simple idea, the one step, two step idea is, oh, you know, government bad, borders bad, government or borders are a government thing, they're bad. But I think Lou Rockwell kind of has a better interpretation of what's actually going on. In a free society, all property is private property. And so everybody who comes onto that property has to be invited. And right now, the immigration is a government program where they're getting free use of roads, getting free use of other public goods. And, you know, I'd love to live in a society where immigration is just called moving. But where it stands right now, they are... there's obvious motives to both parties. One sponsored by big business and corporate interests, the other sponsored just by importing a voter base to have open borders. But as far as the people who the property owners already here, all of the public goods that have been expropriated from us, such as the road in front of my house that I should own, or the land behind my house that I should own, or something like that, but instead the state owns it. That should go back to me, or, you know, people in my communities, and we should have an ability to restrict access. Everybody has to be invited in order to come in. And of course, it's very something I've been mulling over lately is how, in many ways, in a private property society, how much more totalitarian it actually would become. Because right now, the state guarantees me the right to walk down the road with a sign protesting things, and allows me to carry a gun down the road, or anything like that. Just thinking about in a private society, you know, I do not necessarily have those abilities. You know, we're working towards a government for, you know, a top-down enforcement of that versus a societal approach to norms and behavior. You know, obviously roads aren't going to be used if it's mandated that you have to shoot RPGs at people who drive slow in the left lane or something like that.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. And as far as the whole Glenn Beck thing goes with him on CNN, the real thing for me is I know Glenn Beck has been in the bag for Ted Cruz since the beginning. And obviously he's a never Trump guy, but he's also a never Hillary guy. So I guess he's either going to be abstaining or voting third party. In either case, I cannot bring myself to, whereas I do not identify with either, where I do completely agree with Donald Trump on a few things when it comes to immigration and how we just have to buck up again. Because, like I said, wouldn't we all like to just stop the spending? But is that realistically going to happen? No, not really. I don't believe so. Even though if there's ever a referendum, you know where my vote will be. Stop spending. But aside from that, if you know where the wind is blowing and you know the only way to sustain that terrible idea is to make sure that you know that the only people taking part in this are people who are citizens, and to actually preserve in that same respect the concept of citizenship. I mean, what is citizenship then if it's just words on a piece of paper, just like anything else, and it doesn't actually bring you any actual benefit? When you have to be told to wait for something, when you are being but you're not really getting any of the benefit. When especially when people like veterans are just destroyed at the VA, and goddamn, man. I mean, it's like...
Well, I think... this goes back to another great economist who actually hates Donald Trump, but I don't think he understands, or he's a little hyperbolic, is Jeffrey Tucker. Have you ever read him?
No.
He writes for FEE, the Freedom or Foundation for Economic Education, a lot, and I enjoy his words, but he thinks that Trump's a brown shirt. Anyways, but one of his great observations is that all socialism tends to originate as a product of denying scarcity. They are people who exist in a world where they don't believe scarcity exists. Just like rabbits in a grass field, there's way more grass than there are rabbits to eat it. Whereas in sort of the classical liberal sense, there's, you know, more of the perspective of the wolf or fox or something like that. You know, sure, there's lots of rabbits, but, you know, if we really gorge on rabbits, there's not going to be any rabbits next year, and then we all starve. I think the perspective of there's a cookie jar, and right now we've got, you know, 300 million Americans plus 30 million or 11 million immigrants here taking out of the cookie jar, or we can just have the 300 million Americans taking out of the cookie jar. And so if we can reduce actual scarcity, and the cookie jar is, of course, the big fat cowl of government goods.
How do you do it, though? In theory, we know what would make that's the real big thing here. We can all talk about what the ideal world would be, but how do you really reduce the scarcity and all, you know, what would we have to do? Who would be willing to do it? And is it possible? And if it's not, then why are we even talking about it? That's the thing. I feel so. I know it's a terrible trap. You know, you start thinking about how great life could be, how great the world could be if this happened, and then you realize, who am I surrounded by? These motherfuckers. Nobody wants to do any of this shit. And that's the other thing. I heard somebody made a comment today that I really agreed with, that if you send, because all the hardline people would say, yeah, send the 11 to 30 million people back. And then you ask yourself, who's going to do all those little tiny jobs? I really think that the work ethic of the American people, there's jobs out there. People can get help wanted. If our grandparents' generation were living today, they would be cobbling together 4, 5, 6 jobs, staying up for days on end to make all the money they can working. It's not so much that, you know, the jobs aren't there and immigrants are stealing jobs. I really do believe that the work ethic and the soul of the country, the people living in this country, has been completely destroyed. And even if you send back those 30 million people, I think the point that was brought up today elsewhere around radio was that, seriously, do you believe that is suddenly going to spark some massive wave of American ingenuity and work ethic and we're rising? Absolutely fucking not. Everybody's go racing to the local pizzeria to start chopping salads? Are you kidding me? That's not going to change anything.
Well, I think, I mean, there's two ends of that, you know. There's the cheap labor end of it. But that has an effect on, say, you know, there's a crisis of educated Americans, you know, people with 4 years degrees that can't find jobs. And the thing about that is when we're abundantly have cheap labor everywhere, that means that there's a low incentive to automate stuff. You know, slavery, basically, the technology was there in 200 BC for the Industrial Revolution to take place. Okay, slavery basically took retarded the development of the Industrial Revolution by 2,000 years. Okay.
Wait.
Because
wait,
what labor point, was so cheap.
What point? What's the topic again? I forgot there, the first onset of what you said.
So,
how did slavery?
I think that Americans, you know, educated Americans, who lots of us have 4-year degrees and whatever, you know, we could be the people who are working on the robots or overseeing the lines of automation and stuff like that. But because there's all this cheap labor here, there's no incentive for somebody to build the robot that picks grapes or washes cabbages or whatever. And I was bringing that back to, you know, we had steam engines in ancient Greece. We had watch mechanisms, the Antikythera mechanism, and all this other stuff that would be able to be basic machinery and create factories and all of this stuff. But, you know, of course, there was slavery, there was cheap labor, and it was ridiculously expensive to build these machines that could do 1/100th of what an actual person could do. And so it took thousands of years for somebody to actually put it together to start industrializing the means of production and actually reduce scarcity in a real way. So, you know, when you depress wages in the U.S., you're de-incentivizing automation, which creates a lot of high-tech jobs.
I understand now. I understand what you're saying. Hey, thank you for spending some time with me, man. I'm gonna get off in a couple of minutes here. Oh, let's finish your point, though.
Oh, I was just going to read something from Gadget Doc he posted in the chat. It would raise the wage of entry-level jobs. Furthermore, why would somebody work three jobs that when they know they should make be able to work one and make the same amount? Then you also have employers that won't hire because you're overqualified. I get passed over on jobs because I was overqualified. I have the same experience. And I think that, they have the excuse that they can pay somebody with just a high school degree $8, or somebody coming out of college is going to expect at least, like 10 or 12 or something like that.
Yeah.
And so the high school graduate with lower standards gets the job every time.
Oh, well, and there you go. But you're never going to be able to talk about this stuff with anybody because it's so deep.
And I don't blame business people for it. It's just economics. You make the decisions you need to make in order to survive and concentrate resources in profitable ways, because that's society's way of telling you that you're combining resources and scarce resources into ways that are things that are more valuable than they originally were or worth.
Yeah.
But the incentives that are created all around us greatly pervert human progress.
Very well said, my man, and thank you so much again for spending some time with me.
Thank you.
Good 25-minute segment. Have a good weekend, my friend. Have one. Have two good weekends. Everybody, I just want to take a moment to thank you all. We'll start next weekend off with this journal over here that transgenderism is not supported by scientific evidence, which is going to make a lot of people very, very upset. So we got to talk about that, because we haven't had an update in that field in a while. But thank you guys for hanging out with me on a Friday night. I would have to say that the first hour was really tight. Did our thing. Then you got a second half hour, an additional half hour of overtime. But everyone, please, if you have a minute, please go check out the Patreon, patreon.com/quitefrankly. And if you find it in your heart of hearts to pledge either a dollar, $5, there's a $10 reward, and there's the sterling 1776 package where we become pen pals, then by all means, I'd love to have you a part of the fuel that really makes us keep going. Because I really want to go hard into the winter and then into 2017. Ready for everything that's about to come at us. This is the only beginning. This is only the beginning. Also, I just added a $5 perk. I'm going to start a vlog, just a roundup of what we talked about over the week. And I thought it was pretty chill tonight. Gonna get some more chill going on next week. Gonna get some good guests and maybe some hookah. I hope you guys stay elevated, get lifted, watch some good movies, watch some good docs, get out, breathe this fresh air. Sweat a little bit. I got a good workout coming out tomorrow. Good workout tomorrow. Everybody have a good one. Be well. Love y'all.